Hi, Simona. I'm so glad that you're with me and with our community again after we had our last conversation a bit more than 1.5 years ago, I think. It's great to see you. Thanks for taking some time to answer some questions from my side as well as from the community. Obviously, this is something a little bit out of the ordinary year for all of us. So first of all, how are you doing personally? Is everything all right with yourself?
Yeah, hi, and thanks for having me. I'm happy to give this interview, actually the first interview within a long time within this pandemic situation. And also thanks for asking. I'm doing pretty well, and I'm really happy that no one in our company, at least in Riga, haven't got sick or anything. So we are doing pretty good.
Okay, I love it. Obviously, you know, COVID-19 has had a huge impact, I think, on many companies in the past months and will still continue to have probably moving forward. How would you say has VSMS Group as a whole been affected by COVID-19? What can you say to that?
Well, definitely pandemic took us by surprise, I guess, as a lot of companies in this industry. And up until the last day, we didn't believe that this lockdown will be actually introduced and we will have to work from home. And I guess that was one of the biggest challenges for us to organize all the working from home, because, as you know, we have a lot of people who are working directly with the customers through phone, through emails and everything. And our technical people were really challenged at those 2-3 days where we were setting everything up. And I guess as this thing, as a home office, was never really part of the culture in our company. We were always like working from the office. I guess it also brought a challenge for our managers in terms of how to organize the work of the team and how to keep track of KPIs and how to control everything. But I think, and I believe, we really worked effectively during this time. And I would like to express a gratitude to all the team, especially VSMS team, because we got out alive and doing pretty well. So I believe these changes and these challenges only brought like a positive effect up until now.
How is it currently? How are you affected in terms of remote work? What are the company policies that you have in place now?
Yeah, so we kind of came to this thing that we are now working 3 days from the office and 2 days from home. And actually this has brought like a more peaceful environment to the company, because when people are staying at home, they have this like extra 2 hours to do their things at home and be calm and everything and sleep well, I guess. So I see this only as a positive thing. And I think the level of trust within the teams really went up. I can only be grateful to my team, who were working perfectly from home and did everything that was required. So I think this is a nice way how to change things, because I guess there was a huge bubble around fintech up until this time in terms of all this company cultures and spendings and everything. And pandemic only forced companies to kind of see their situations in a different way, maybe relocate resources and everything. So I believe it's a really positive outcome in terms of the work organization.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think, I guess, you know, obviously fintechs, they pride themselves also a little bit with being more on the digital native side. And obviously you would obviously, I guess, expect also them to be the first one to adapt to those kind of circumstances. And then obviously establishing also a little bit more of this modern remote work lifestyle within the corporate world. Obviously, let's talk a little bit about the economic challenges, or let's say more the economic uncertainty that comes along with COVID-19. It was very interesting for me to observe how many different platforms have responded and reacted to that, some more offensively, some more defensively in terms of what they communicate. Mintos, I remember always with that, I think, first Ask Mintos Anything session, where they said they were really like cutting costs by 40% as a consequence, also laying off many employees. How is YSMS Group dealing with that topic? And in terms of, you know, this dealing with that uncertainty, maybe cutting costs on one side, let people go, some of your employees. Did you have something like in a similar nature? Did you take some measures and did you take action on this as well?
Well, I must say that YSMS Group has always been a pretty conservative in terms of expanding team rapidly. Actually, yes, we have expanded over the years, but not maybe in that level as other companies did. So we kind of maybe that gave us a little bit of competitive advantage in terms of layoffs. So we only laid off a few people, and this number doesn't even reach like a 10% of all personnel here in the company. Of course, we also found that some things could maybe be done differently or more effectively. So unfortunately, we had to say goodbye to some of our colleagues. But in general, I guess we took this approach that we ratherly cut some marketing spendings and maybe shift from more challenging projects to those that that are maybe more profitable or with the larger this development opportunity. So we kind of did this internally and managed everything internally. And I guess staying at home for a few months also kind of helped us to deal with the one part of spendings in terms both for the company and for employees. Of course, we also experienced some wage cut at some time, temporarily, of course. And now, as everything has stabilized, we are back on track. And as I told, we are really happy that our employees stayed with us and stayed through this difficult time. Because, of course, it's completely different setup when you're working at home. You may lack the information because you do not meet your colleagues on a daily basis. You may develop some fears and uncertainties and thoughts about the company and how everything will be, because you also observe everything that happens in the industry. And I also heard that not only Mintos, but other companies in the industry made these huge cuts on the employees and everything. And of course, it scares you as a human who works in this industry. But I guess our management team did a pretty great job at this by saving the company, saving employees, and keeping the great spirit. So I think we can say that we have got out of this pretty well.
Can you make this maybe a bit more tangible? Like, because reducing costs by 40%, like Mintos did, is something, you know, people can rationally understand. Can you give some tangible figures in terms of what cutting costs means effectively in numbers?
Well, actually, I would not like to say any specific, but I can say that if we speak about layoffs, then maximum we laid off one or two people from some departments. Considered larger departments is marketing and things that could be collided or the workload can be shifted to other persons. And in terms of marketing, there was one period where we kind of almost eliminated all of the marketing, I mean the digital marketing, because we understood that there's no need for that at this time, and we should rather work on building this trust within this complicated situation, like providing non-stop direct communication with investors through the investor support service. And I guess that was the main thing that we did within this time.
Okay. Very interesting for me to observe, like in those past months, how the peer-to-peer platforms have been communicated also externally to keep investors up to date. And some have been very extreme, like on a very regular base. You know, in general, I think the level of communication and transparency definitely increased for many platforms. And I know you're a true marketing and communication professional. Vyandesh, on the other side, I think has been very quiet. And I rarely read or heard anything, which I think, first of all, when there's nothing that happens negatively as an outcome to the investor, which can be interpreted as a positive signal. But why has Vyandesh, for my personal feeling, and also for many others, has been very quiet in those past months, keeping people posted in terms of company developments?
Yes, yeah, so first of all, we have never been about the really loud and huge PR or anything. And within this time, we understood that the right approach for us is to ensure really transparent and direct communication with investors when they reach out to us, considering the investor support service. We also were really interested in communicating with them through new platforms as Telegram, where people are chatting a lot and this like is buzzing all the time. And as our team got a little bit smaller and we were really focused in getting everything in order by still working on other projects that are really important for us, for example, this IBF licensation and everything. And we actually were so focused that we thought that we do not need to kind of provide these empty statements without any new developments, because you understand that within this time, companies were really focused on maintaining their positions and getting everything in order rather than developing something really new and launching some great products or anything. So yeah, we chose this approach that we do not want to make these empty statements, but we were really focused on the direct communication with investors. And I think this is pretty great because I personally received a lot of phone calls from our investors who reached out to me directly. And I believe this is a better way how to ensure that we are doing great rather than just saying on the Facebook, hey, we're okay, like invest with us. I mean, this may be a good approach for others, but for us, as we are not a huge fan of loud PR, but rather than the practical approach, I think it worked pretty well. Of course, maybe someone was expecting more like public statements, but then again, if nothing really new and huge happens within this time and we are focused on maintaining our work, why should we waste time and waste the space of the communication for this? So I believe everyone who wanted, they kind of reached out to us and get their answers at the same transparent level as we ensured it before.
Hmm. Okay, interesting. Maybe for all the ones that are watching this YouTube video now, leave in the comments your statement and your view on ViInvest and how you perceived ViInvest performance in recent months, and if you have maybe been one of the ones that called Simona and asked also about the state of ViInvest, leave your opinion in the comments, please. Okay, let's switch to the development of the lending business. Obviously, it's something that I or that many investors observe very closely. How is the funded loan volume developing? When we look at ViInvest, we see that from March 2020 onwards, the numbers have decreased to now I would say constant range between 3.8 million and 4.2 million. And obviously the question here is that on one side due to a lack of demand from investor side, or do you maybe also take a more conservative approach with the supply of new loans? Where's the truth basically? What can you say to this point?
So the March was the first month where we understood that some measures must be taken because everything escalated really quickly in the Europe, and we introduced this really conservative scoring method that we were kind of adjusted if needed, but we are still sticking to it because as this huge pandemic boom has kind of slowed down, we are still observing the markets and still trying to figure out what would be the best approach. And I cannot emphasize this enough, but we are a pretty conservative company in terms of this, and our main goal is to maintain a really qualitative portfolio with a good results. So we believe that this approach at this time is more effective than giving out a lot of loans and then kind of observing our default rate going up. Our risk teams believes that this is the best thing to do right now, and I guess even though the volumes are a bit lower than it was, we still have a pretty good credit portfolio.
Mm. But what I can take out from this is essentially, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I couldn't witness any cash drag, at least on my personal account, but from what you're saying, it indicates to me you could even increase the volumes and the loan, the volume of the loan, the volume of the loan level even further, right? So there would be a potential, but you say the decrease is largely due to BioInvest taking a more conservative approach with the loan selection. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. And our scoring model gives us an opportunity to vary with this thing depending on situation. And by now, we are still sticking to this more conservative approach just to avoid any defaults or any bad scenarios that may happen.
Okay. Something I'm curious to know is obviously you're offering your lending products in many different countries. I think it's 7 in total if we take Vietnam into account. Do you observe any country-specific differences in terms of the loan performance already? And if so, how did you maybe also take or took action already based on your findings?
Well, there is no news in terms of this. There has always been differences between repayment culture in different countries. For example, you can never compare Latvia with Spain and vice versa. And I believe that this COVID situation also kind of reflects on this because Spain was more affected than Latvia was affected within the pandemic. And as in a lot of countries, there were these moratoriums introduced, I guess this will kind of show the result in the beginning of 2021, because by now it's too early to judge and to observe the situation, because in some countries, the moratoriums will only end at the end of this year, for example, in Romania. So by now, we kind of see this as a positive thing because people are giving the opportunity to postpone their payment, not to delay it and not to go in deeper debt or something. So maybe this will give a chance for customers to get out of this like financial downturn and get back to their regular payment schedule. At least this is what we believe. But then again, as I said, the real effect of this will be only observed probably in the first half of the next year.
Okay. And while you're talking about the moratorium that are in place in many countries, do you have already some sort of forecast in terms of how default rates will potentially increase or in general will develop then after moratoriums are running out in many countries? And also maybe aside from this, how you forecast also default rates in the future now?
Actually, taking into account our conservative approach, our default rate has gone down within this time, which is really a positive thing for us. And we believe
in the past months, you mean, or?
Yes, in the past months. Yeah, because we were really closely monitoring these months, starting from the March up until now, because this is like this uncertain period of time. And these months have shown that the default rate has been lowered. And we believe that the people will actually use the moratoriums as a good thing for renewing their payment schedule, because as I mentioned, postponing is better than delaying. And then again, I would like to remind that our investors have not to be worried about this because of the buyback guarantee that we have always ensured and never canceled also during the pandemic. And we really believe in this instrument as such, because it gives an investors like more security within this time, actually. And as our risk team predicts, that we believe that our default rates will not go up really fast. And I think that the outlook for us is pretty good by now, at least judging by numbers we have up until now.
Yeah, but the default rates as a consequence decrease because of the moratoriums that have been in place?
Well, that's actually a good question. And as I mentioned, it will only be, analyzed and observed within the first half of the next year, because I believe it's too soon to make any judgments on this. Yeah. I think everyone around the industry is kind of testing waters still, because there was a huge downturn. And then again, it's going up pretty fast, I guess. So it's still an uncertainty zone.
Yeah. Okay. I see. Because obviously it's something to take into account, you know, when default rates decrease, what seems to be a bit more against the trend that most people would expect if that's due to moratoriums being in place. And that's why, you know, more people have, or the default rate doesn't increase. Okay, thank you very much for those insights. One thing or one topic I think that is quite, that gets more and more attention is obviously the licensing process. I think you also quickly mentioned the progress now being made in Latvia. What would you say is the current state of the licensing process in Latvia in general, but also for Via Invest, obviously, in particular?
I will actually not be able to comment about the situation in general because I guess every company has its own stage where they're at with the licensation. But I can say that Via Invest is a final stage of it, and we only have like a few details that were left to communicate with the potential regulator. But also, I think we need to keep in mind that as more and more companies are applying for this license, probably the regulator could want to wait for everyone to get on the same page and kind of reach a certain level of equality in terms of this, and then to hand out the licenses. But we really hope that it will happen really soon to Via Invest, because we have started this process a long time ago and really put a great effort into it. And we are ready to also make these technical developments that are necessary to shift from listing loans to listing securities.
Interesting. I know that following Via Invest also on Instagram, that you're also very eager to communicate, like, okay, what are the AML policies that will come in place then with the new license, and what the investment brokerage firm license means in general for investors. Maybe in this interview, you can emphasize again, you know, what will be the impact being a licensed company in Latvia, then what will this mean for Via Invest? As well as how much safer, effectively, do you think investing will become then also for investors?
Yeah, I can say that personally, I am really excited about companies getting this license, because finally, the market will become regulated, and we will have really serious regulator in the person of the Financial and Capital Market Commission that is working here in Latvia. And this will finally set like a united rule set for all the companies that will get license. And I guess it will help investors to maybe predict what can happen, or they will have like a common knowledge about what if something happens, what will happen to me then? Because by now, and also observing all the situations that happened during the first part of the year and all the platforms that crashed, it has been, so to say, heartbreaking for platforms to observe, because it really affects the trust within the industry and kind of, was like a first snow for everyone. So this licensation is actually pretty, pretty great thing that will happen soon, I guess. And the one thing I wanted to emphasize that is really great for investors is that when the IBF license comes into the force and we have shifted to this the new work model, we will test our investors to kind of divide them into several groups by their knowledge about investing, and the group of non-professional investors, which I guess can apply to almost every investor within the P2P, will be granted the right to receive up to 90% or up to 20,000 euros compensation in case of something goes south with the company. So I believe this is a really great thing, and it has never been present within the P2P industry. And I think it will minimize investors' risks and kind of give them a safer background to invest and to try opportunities within this. And also a great thing that all the IBFs will be required to publish their annual reports. So it will mean that all the companies that will have the license will be fully transparent, and investors will have better chance to evaluate their financial reports and everything. And the opportunity to reach out to regulator in case of something seems suspicious or something may not work as expected, investors will always have one independent body to reach out to discuss anything that concerns them. I believe this is pretty great.
Okay, thank you very much for those insights. Now we're getting back to the financial sides and the annual reports in a bit. But prior, I would like to talk with you about the joint venture that you started with Twino earlier this year. prior COVID time, so to say. Let's talk about Vamo, your collaboration that you started with Twino together in Vietnam. What can you say in general how this has been, you know, developing the progress in Vietnam in general? But also, I think when I remember correctly, you mentioned something like also investors can start to invest into Vietnamese assets by the end of this year. Now, I know you have a big business loan from Vietnam, but I thought you probably then also consumer loans will come to the investment platform via Invest. Is that something that is still up to date? Is that something that maybe will be postponed now? And what is the development with that joint venture in Vietnam in general?
Yeah, so we are really happy about Vietnam, and it has been a huge positive challenge for us to enter such market, and we needed to refocus to another culture and another part of the world we are working with, and actually that's been really interesting tasks for all the teams, I guess, that are into this process for both risks and marketing and everything. So, yeah, and Twino has been a great help, and we are really working on this product together, and everything, I guess, is going pretty great. And if we speak about the consumer loans listed on the platform, I will not be able to give an exact date, but it's still on the plan, and we are actually planning to do it hopefully within this year. But yeah, it depends on all the technical details, because we need to like find the common sense between us, Twino, and everyone to merge all these technical processes and everything. So yes, we are working to make this happen, but unfortunately no actual date by now.
So no certainty in terms of whether there will be Vietnamese consumer loans on the platform by the end of this year. It's what I can take out from this. Can you maybe talk or give a little bit more insight to how the overall funding volume develops also in Vietnam? Because I think just at one point you said, or I remember you posted something like, okay, we have funded now 1,000 loans in Vietnam. But since then, I never really heard like how the numbers are developing. Can you maybe provide also some insights in terms of how the loan volume and the amount of loans quantity-wise has developed in Southeast Asia now?
Yeah, to provide exact numbers, maybe I could give a feedback after this interview, but the thing I can say is that there also we were testing waters for some time, actually testing these scoring models and how we apply them, because Vietnam is completely different market from Europe that we are used to, and kind of can predict what will happen and what will not happen if we do that or this. And Vietnam has been also a challenge in terms of this, but I believe that we have tested both scoring process and the marketing, which kind of is really related one to each other. And I think we are doing pretty great, but we are not going really huge there by now. We are also like keeping this pretty conservative just to be sure about our credit portfolio, because you do not want to enter a new country and get a portfolio of defaults and everything. So yeah, we kind of transferred all this, our experience and approach there. But yeah, if you want some exact numbers, I could maybe provide this after the interview.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I was just curious. I came a bit more out of the blue now because I was quite curious to see, also understanding the growth in numbers. Last question, maybe in terms of that joint venture with Twino. As far as I remember, you also said like it shouldn't be, or it's not supposed to be the only market you want to discover together alongside Twino. I think the Philippines have been one of the target markets for both of you. And what's the plan right now in terms of the further development and expansion also to other Southeast Asian countries like the Philippines, for instance?
Yeah, the Philippines is still the next country we will target, and we actually have started the research process and establishing the company, and once something is set up and we have something to say, we'll definitely inform the public. And yeah, actually this is going according to the plan. We have kind of established in Vietnam and had this like an overview how everything works, and we are ready now to go further with the Philippines.
All right. To me, the last bigger topic would be the financial situation of Via Invest, respectively Via SMS Group. One of the things I personally look at with a very positive feelings is, obviously publishing annual reports has been something within the nature of Via SMS Group for many, many years. I think since 2012, great value, great level of transparency, and ultimately also the performance. If you look at that for many years now, I think since 2013, 14, although you've been performing in a very high regulated loan market, payday loans mostly, you're still able to run a profitable business for many, many years already. Now in terms of 2019, we haven't seen anything yet from Via SMS Group. Why is that? When is it going to happen? And maybe can you spoil already a few results from last year's performance?
Yeah, thank you very much for this question. And I think it's a really important question. And it's really important for me to emphasize that the consolidated financial report of the group will be published. The thing is, why we are still holding on it is because deadlines for submitting audited financial reports in different countries have shifted due to this pandemic situation. And regarding to Latvia, where separate entities of the group are registered, like group itself, Via Invest, Via SMS Latvia, we have already submitted everything to the State Revenue Service, and everything is available publicly within this commercial registry of Latvia. But we are still waiting for this huge report to roll in, because it consists of the lot of the parts, not only the group report, but of course all the reports of the subsidiaries, loan originators and everything. And as we are operating in various countries with the various policy regarding this financial statement submission, we are still waiting for some reports to roll in. We really, really hope that it will happen within September, and we will publish the report right away when we receive all the parts. And I'm really sorry because this hasn't happened yet, but unfortunately we cannot in any means affect this. This depends on the local legislation of the countries. But yes, I guess September must be it, and we will definitely send out the newsletter and publish it as soon as everything happens. And well, maybe. About the numbers, I'm sorry I interrupted.
Sorry, go
you.
Ahead.
Yeah, so what I can say about the 2019, that the group has worked with the operational profits, that's definitely like in many years before, and our net turnover was around 28 million, so I guess it's a pretty great number, and all the other things and details will be then revealed in the financial statement, but I can assure that we are still rolling and everything happens great with us, so let's just wait for the report and exact numbers for the subsidiaries and the group itself.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I wanted to ask if you can maybe then reveal, at least for Latvia, already a couple numbers. I don't know if you have any specific data also for your home country.
Actually, I don't have these numbers on my hands, but I could maybe provide it later. Then you could just maybe write in comment or something.
Yeah, but probably by the time, I think maybe the interview goes out in a week, latest in two, so maybe the report, the overall report will be out by then already, so.
Fingers crossed. I'm really waiting for this report, because we receive a lot of questions about this, and I can understand the frustration of investors, because usually the report is published in May or April, and now it's already September and nothing's out, but yeah, I'm just asking for some understanding because of this, all the deadline shift within the countries. It's been really frustrating for us too. So, but we promise that everything will be published as soon as it rolls in.
All right, we look forward to that. That will be my last question. Can you already forecast how 2020 will also impact the financial performance of Via SMS Group? And how important is it also for the company in general to keep that streak going of being profitable? Is that something that you're aiming at also achieving as a financial result? Then when we in next year can look back to 2020, is that important to you? And how do you in general forecast the financial performance for this year, 2020?
Of course, being profitable is always a great sign and a great thing to emphasize, but I think everyone understands that this year has been really challenging for majority of companies, and I believe a lot of companies will kind of publish the reports with the huge changes in that. I mean, in terms of maybe closing some subsidiaries, maybe opening something new, maybe consolidating everything and so. And I just wanted to say that in 2020, we were really focused on one product that has been important for us up until now also. It is our digital payments platform, Violet, that is holding the electronic money institution license. And also, this will be visible in our reports, the management report that is also included in the financial statement. We are really aiming to develop Violet as a common platform for all the products the group has developed up until now. So to make it like something new, something great, and one united platform for all the customers, all the products and everything, that would be really convenient to use. And you don't have to go to different websites to use our products. So everything would be available in one website, in one mobile application, in one platform. So we are really working hard to achieve this. And we have already started some projects in separate loan origination countries to kind of engage the loan origination and issuing process with this Violet, so people could get the loan through the payments card that they have on Violet and so on. So this has been our destination of investments within the company, and a lot of our resources are focused on this process. So I guess it will always kind of appear on the financial statement and everything. And I think we'll see in the 2021, because it's by now it's really, really hard to predict anything, any numbers, because a situation maybe has slowed down with pandemic. I don't think it's over, and autumn is coming when people will start to get back into offices, get back into public transportation, and let's see how the situation escalates, and if there will be a second wave of this lockdown or anything. Hopefully not, but you can never be over prepared, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe one follow-up question, because you touched based on Violet. I think it was last year, if I remember correctly, when you launched it. Was it maybe in summer, in June or something? Is that about a year ago now?
I guess it's 2 years already. If I'm not
2 years already. No, you're right. No, I think you're right. I think you showed me also the card when I was in Riga, right?
Yes, that's true.
And then you launched it probably in summer 2018. So time flies.
Yeah.
So that's already so long ago. Crazy. Can you maybe talk just very quickly about Violet? It's a digital payment platform. I know that, you know, what you said, what comes along with it, the electronic money institution license in Lithuania, to obtain the license at first, also maintaining it requires also a lot of resources. I know this from a couple other sources, and now I think it perfectly makes sense if you want to center more on Violet. How has growth been with Violet? How many customers do you have currently with Violet? And how do you want to integrate it? I know you recently also made adjustments that all the deposits and withdrawals will run through Violet, obviously, because you have the infrastructure. So why using a third party? So when that, to me, that makes perfectly sense. But just like about Violet, how many customers you have had as a development in the past 2 years, and just a couple words on that platform.
Yeah, I believe Violet is doing pretty great. Up until now, we have more than 40,000 active accounts on Violet, and I think it's a pretty good number for a fresh company. And as I said, we have huge plan for this platform, not only because it has this ME license, but also it kind of gives us a perspective on how to integrate effectively and maybe make some processes that are going on a daily basis to make it more effective with the help of Violet. Because if we have such resource and if we have such basis for this, why don't do it? And you mentioned correctly that it takes a lot of resources, both human and financial, to establish such thing. And I would like to say that Violet has its own separate team that is working with the development, with marketing and everything. And also this banking part of the product, because Violet serves not only private customers, but also the legal entities, and they have this like a private bankers unit and everything. So this is something also completely new for us as a group, and we are really proud of this product, and hopefully our plans will come to true, and we will be able to create something completely unique within the fintech industry.
Okay, where's the majority of those Violet customers coming from? Is that in Latvia or?
Actually, no, it's all across Europe. But yeah, if you want the particular division by the countries, then I will maybe present it later after this.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, you're surprised with this question about the Violet. I don't have an answer.
No, never mind. I just, by chance, you would have known. Okay, well, that was very insightful. I think that was maybe also an interview many have looked forward to for some time now, because I also receive questions here and there. How is Violet performing? I rarely get any information. So hopefully that interview has served them well, and they got a bit more of a better feeling now how to evaluate Violet at this current stage. Simona, thank you very much for taking some time. It was a pleasure once again. Hopefully we see each other next time then in person, can maybe have a chat here and there. Any last words, anything that we maybe forgot to emphasize, your last words to the audience? The stage is yours.
Yeah, I think I just wanted to thank all our investors for the trust and for staying with us during these challenging times. We really appreciate that, and we have also been doing everything to be honest and transparent and reachable for investors. So in case you have any questions, any concerns or anything, you can always reach out to me personally by LinkedIn or by email, or just write to investor support service and just mention that you want to speak with me or something. We are really open to the conversation with investors, and we really are ready to take time to engage with every single investor who reaches out to us. So please do not hesitate to address any questions if you have.
All right. I love it. Thank you very much, Simona. And then looking forward to hear from Violet soon.
Yeah, thank you.